Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate New York, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and all the way to the western suburbs of Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's market, that's an absolute necessity, because you have a problem today if you're in a competing situation and you have a mortgage contingency. In other words, your offer is subject to getting a mortgage commitment, that is. With our product, the pre-purchase commitment, you walk in with a mortgage commitment, which is exactly the same to the seller as cash. And you want to put yourself in that position if you want to make sure that you win in those competitive situations. And you also need the advice of an experienced professional to make sure that happens. So call Hunt Real Estate and speak to one of our professionals today. And call Hunt Mortgage about that pre-purchase commitment, 633-3700. And what you'll find, if nothing else, you'll find personalized, customized, knock-your-socks-off service. And check out that low-rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, even Phoenix, Arizona, and through our links to Boston, Massachusetts as well. Simply dial 631-4800. That's a local number. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any of the brokers. You'll drive by a sign sometimes, you'll see all kinds of things on it, 14 phone numbers, QR codes, riders, all kinds of things, pictures, yet it's very difficult to discern all that. All you have to do is remember one phone number here in Western New York, 631-4800, and the street number of the house. That's all you need to know. We have a very active real estate market right now. It's in the economy as a whole. It's one of the highlights because it's surging, really, following the shutdown as people return to the market more normally, where you actually look at a house instead of trying to do everything virtually. Although you can do everything virtually through huntrealestate.com, it's important that in today's world that many of you want to exactly see what you're going to buy. And so that's available now through the opening up of the real estate industry, and so we're hopefully going to be able to serve you that way as well. We have a very special show for you today. Live remote, we have Julie Barrett O'Neill. Ms. O'Neill is the Executive Director of LISC, LISC, the Local Initiative Support Corporation. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
It's good to have you with us, Julie. So, Julie, you're the executive director, but we need to know a little bit about, tell us a little bit about what LISC is and how it was started.
So LISC was created 40 years ago nationally as a solution for the need for an intermediary. The Ford Foundation recognized that there was a disconnect between frontline community-based organizations and many of the funders and institutions that were trying to deploy capital on the ground to transform neighborhoods. And so the premise was that LISC could bridge that gap and help organizations both with technical assistance and the access to capital in order to achieve success. And we started in Buffalo 20 years ago under the leadership of Michael Clark, and we were brought to Buffalo by Victor Rice and the Buffalo Niagara Partnership.
So that... You got to explain a little bit exactly how you do what you do. You connect people, how you put organizations together to make things happen, you provide financing. How does it work?
So I think very often we serve in the middle space, and Buffalo doesn't have a lot of these organizations, but we'll work with a community-based organization, a small nonprofit, someone working from their kitchen table who has a great idea for transforming their neighborhood. or has recognized a need, for example, for more housing or a grocery store or a health facility in their neighborhood. But they have a day job and they have another, they have other responsibilities in their lives. And these transactions, particularly in neighborhoods and communities with soft real estate markets, can be very difficult to navigate and assemble if this is not your typical life experience. And so LISC both invests in those organizations. We provide developer training. And then we help, and so we help to cultivate projects that are then investment ready and can attract capital into neighborhoods to help to really move the needle.
So you're an advisory group.
Yes. So we're an intermediary, and we're not. So we don't actually build housing or projects. We do not own those pieces. We work to really build up the capacity of entities within neighborhoods to be able to do the work.
Here in Buffalo, give us an example of a project that you've been involved with.
Sure. Over time, we have done a lot of work, for example, with Push Buffalo, starting out with a neighborhood planning series several years ago that resulted in a number of initial projects, as well as capacity building to help them over time build the organizational infrastructure to deploy the kinds of programs that they're well recognized for now across the country. We've done similar work with University District Community Development Association, with Belmont Housing, Heart of the City Neighborhoods, where those organizations have got great potential to do work, but need an ally and a technical resource in order to be successful over time, including, helping to provide capacity building funding to help them move, through the various stages of organizational development.
So you've been involved in kind of like-kind organizations in the past. You were head of the Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper for about 10 years. So how have you translated that experience into what you're doing now?
What's really interesting to me is while they're slightly different sectors, it's a very similar model. And one of the most striking things that occurred that I ran into when I was at Riverkeeper, or at that time Riverkeeper, was that many people had studied or identified problems in terms of water quality on the Buffalo River, but there was not a clear investable project that would actually solve the problem. And by that, we understood how, for example, mud moved in the river, but we didn't actually have calculations for the volume and the cost of digging it out of the river and containing it or removing it as a risk. And so that's very often the disconnection that we'll see at the neighborhood level. You need to get the necessary, phase one analyses, appraisals, architectural drawings, all of the pre-development work that really helps then to bring an investment opportunity into an actual place and move that along beyond just an initial concept. But that takes work, and it's very often daunting for an organization or an individual who, again, doesn't have the technical experience to do this, or maybe has several other obligations. So we try to build up the capacity of organizations to move that needle. And it's a very similar formula in both cases.
And you do that by bringing people and resources together? Is that what you do?
Exactly. So LISC is, because we have offices all across the country, and we've been doing this work for 40 years, we have got a wealth of technical trainings and lived experiences for how other neighborhoods and communities have tackled the same problems across the country. And that could be everything from, finding a grocery store, building more daycare availability, connecting individuals beyond just basic workforce training to real income building and wealth building. We have that depth of learned experience, and so we're able to help organizations find a shorter path from A to B and avoid some of the pitfalls and bruises that many organizations, run into along the way, so that they are they come through in a healthier place and can be more effective.
Several weeks ago, I had Pastor Jones, Daryl Jones, on the show to talk about his goal to build a supermarket on the east side of Buffalo. Are you involved in that at all?
We haven't been involved in that project, but we have that's very similar work to what we have been doing throughout the country and is very typical for LISC. So we are actually starting, and LISC has a subsidiary corporation and New Market Support Corporation that leverages New Market's tax credits to help with those kinds of projects very specifically. And so we are have just started again moving back into community to listening what and collecting the project proposals that have been percolating in the neighborhoods at this point in time. And we're trying to pull those together and connect some of the dots so that we can help them get the necessary foundation work to move those projects again to investment so that the community can see their vision in real time.
You've been at this in your current role for just about 2 years. Up to that point, there had been about $131 million invested in Buffalo neighborhoods through, I guess, the facilitation process of LISC. Mm-hmm. So since then, how have things gone?
Things have been going very well. We did take a year to do some strategic planning and retool the organization, only because we had an amazing foundation. But of course, Buffalo is evolving and was changing over that period of time. So our work in 2019 really was connected with the Eastside Avenues opportunity with the governor's Buffalo Billion and the Eastside Corridor Initiative, as well as the UBRI involvement in that program. And so there was a very focused effort in 2019 on building capacity in the Eastside in order to make sure that those neighborhoods were actively participating in Buffalo's recovery and the activity that we were seeing, you know, before the COVID crisis.
That begs the question of what's happened since the COVID crisis. How have you reacted? What has happened to the projects that you're working on? Bring us up to date.
Sure. So LISC nationally, our immediate priority was really leveraging our national infrastructure to support small businesses to the extent that we can. Obviously, there's a huge amount of vulnerability and uncertainty in the market right now for small businesses, but we believe firmly that they're a critical part of neighborhood and community revitalization. And so we pulled together four rounds of small business grant programs. We provided a lot of technical assistance to help organizations that may not have had a clear pathway to a PPP loan to access those resources and have technical support to understand some of the opportunities there. And then we also, LISC at a national level, has been involved with the New York Forward Loan Program, which has got specific funding for small businesses, small landlords, and nonprofits. So that was our immediate push. And we've been regularly meeting also with the housing community, which has had in the traditional community development affordable housing community, which have been navigating a whole series of organizational changes. Many of them had to lay off substantial numbers of staff that were providing frontline programming to seniors or youth or daycare after school programs. They were not able to have their typical fundraisers this year. And so we've been working with their boards and their organizations to implement a number of operational measures to make sure that they can weather this COVID storm. Our lending, I think, like everyone else, has slowed down in part because there's a lot of uncertainty in the market with investment. But we continue to work with several projects in the area with our affiliate National Equity Fund to try to continue to move, you know, real estate deals that have been able to weather the risk management challenges that are coming into play, you know, and get them over the finish line this year if possible.
There seem to be so many organizations out there that want to do good things, that want to create opportunities for investment in real estate and businesses. Yet it seems almost impossible to see how they can coordinate their activities to actually get something done. And in times like these, the ones that are fragile, that might not have the financial strength, could be really much in danger, I think. How do you use a time like this to help organizations work together so that they can make use of what are going to be scarce resources, as you just described.
We're definitely going to be seeing a contraction and a lot of stress on our nonprofit partners over the next year to 2 years. Many of them rely upon either philanthropy and or government funding to do their work. And we know that both the state and the city are going to have serious budget strain, as well as, and philanthropy has appropriately, you know, pivoted to provide emergency response and immediate care relative to both food access to actual health care at this moment in time. And so we've been focusing on really creating good technical resources and support and spaces for the organizational leadership to have clear and frank conversations around where their position is without having a consequence that that's going to result in a penalty where they, where it might erode confidence in that organization. And then we work closely to try to help them strategize around how we stabilize those weaknesses, recognizing that we can't, because we are not a builder, we need those organizations to exist and thrive in order to be able to accomplish our vision. We, by creating some places where those organizations can talk to one another and share the experiences and the challenges of this time, we're continuing to foster trust among organizations and conversations about, you know, instead of hiring a new full-time person to address an issue or to do a project at one organization, we're trying to do a little bit of matchmaking to see if they might, for example, contract with a partner organization that may have some extra capacity, or do a bit of a joint venture between organizations, because we know that it's unlikely that we're going to be able to sustain new staff positions in these organizations over the next 2 years.
If our listeners would like to participate in today's show, you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930, or you can text us at the same number, 803-0930. If you have questions or comments for Julie Barrett O'Neill, the Executive Director of LISC Local Initiatives Support Corporation. So you try to develop some kind of cross-organization communication such that they can build some efficiencies, because they have to. I mean, let's face it, there's fewer resources now. There's a higher unemployment rate. So we've got a series of issues that will delay projects. They very simply will. The other aspect of this, your organization is involved in, even in retail projects, and the future of retail is going to change in some way, shape, or form. It already is changing, and times like these tend to accelerate change all through the economy. So you must have a whole new set of challenges on your hands right now, and I'm wondering, What does a day look like? How do you approach a day given the weight of so many of the issues that seem to be out there right now, including the whole issue of diversity and inclusion and the issues around social injustice and the protests and everything that's going on around us?
So it's actually been a very hopeful time to see all of these challenges. I think, and I probably should have mentioned this in my last point, the people who are doing work in these spaces and trying to tackle these challenges are some of the most creative, dedicated, technically sophisticated individuals that I've run across in my professional days. These are not easy projects to make pencil. And they've had to be incredibly resourceful as organizations to be able to be effective in, you know, a community that has got so many challenges and has for decades, and in the neighborhoods that are most impacted by those challenges. There is so much, and I often underestimate the sophistication and the understanding of how they might tackle these challenges in new and in exciting ways. And so a typical day for us, you know, we always like to listen to our partners. They very often have an idea or a piece that, you know, they want to accomplish, but they run into a number of unnecessary obstacles, you know, throughout that process. There is the infrastructure for doing development heavily you know, supports those who've done it a number of times, who've got, you know, built up capital, who have the ability to be patient with the project. And so organizations need that extra bandwidth, you know, need some extra support to get through that gauntlet. But we do a lot of work listening to community members. We and the organizations that work closely with them. When we hear of an idea, we try to make immediate connections to either projects or resources that LISC may have within its portfolio, as well as to organizations in town that may be doing similar work to create and identify any collaboration opportunities. We're working closely with our LISC national team to understand what financial resources may be available that we can use to help also get those organizations to the next level.
We come back from the break. I'd like you to walk us through an example of a project that you've been involved with in the last couple of years that, that what you deem to be a success, and maybe another project that stalled for whatever reason, maybe just because of what's happening around us today. But before we go to the break, your own background, you have a master's degree in economic development and land use planning from UB. So obviously you've got some technical, obviously quite a bit of technical expertise, including a law degree from the University of Iowa. Up to this point in time, we've talked about kind of the broader approach from your organization. I would like you to be able to drill down a little bit on that and how you create these conversations, you connect organizations with resources. These are beautiful words, but it's hard, I think, sometimes to envision how that will work. We've only got about a minute left. Just tell us what the example is, and then after the break, tell us how that evolved.
So it's actually a little bit before my time at LISC, but I'm going to use the School 77 project that PUSH has done on Buffalo's west side. And in that case, we were involved in a couple of different ways. We were providing some organizational support to PUSH to make sure that their internal operations were able to handle the complex, you know, kind of financial systems that are required when you start to pull in multiple more sophisticated funding sources. And that's been a process that LISC has been involved with for a number of years. We have a number of national partners that we're connected with that do technical training.
Julie, I'm going to have you hold that thought and come back to it, because now we're getting into some specifics that I'd like to hear more about. We'll be right back with more from our house tiers after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I've been spending a little time looking at that, our website and other websites, to see how they operate, and I can assure you that the experience that you'll have at huntrealestate.com will make the whole process easier. And it's the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo and Niagara, but all across upstate, and through our links also to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. And by the way, at our blog at huntrealestate.com, you can find any previous show that we've done, and you can spend as much time or as little time as you like there if you'd like to pick up on something that we may have covered in the past. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our exclusive program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And while you have them on the phone, ask about our pre-purchase commitment that I mentioned earlier, and also a very unique program we call Second Look. Sometimes you might have responded to an ad or something you've seen on television about a mortgage product, and you've gone through the process of qualification or even pre-approval. You want to make sure you're getting the best rate and closing costs, and the only way you can do that is by having a professional take a look at it. Our Second Look program does precisely that. 633-3700. We'll take a second look at it And the worst that can happen is that we'll give you a gift certificate if we can't beat or match the terms and interest rate that you'll find in your existing pre-approval. So ask about that pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan and call 633-3700 today. And if you'd just like to pick up the phone and ask any question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center at 633-9400. One of our customer service reps will either instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs or answer your question right there on the phone, whether it's about buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. The strongest in the industry, we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. Today, I'm live remote with Julie Barrett O'Neill, who is the executive director of LISC, Local Initiatives Support Corporation. And we've been talking about what exactly LISC does and how it helps to improve our community. And you, just before the break, Julie, you were talking about the School 77 project on the west side. I believe that was a project of PUSH, is that correct?
That's correct.
So explain, you were just starting to explain a little bit about how that all evolved and your involvement with it. So could go into a little detail if you would.
So, and admittedly, this project was before I arrived at LISC, but it closed shortly after I joined the organization. And so I want to recognize the leadership of the pre-existing staff in working with PUSH on that project. But it's a good example of the model for the work that LISC does. So we have a longstanding relationship with PUSH Buffalo, where they were developing their capacity to listen and understand the needs of the neighborhood. They have a very strong program where they center the voices of community and an active process where neighborhood members really get to shape what the nature of the project is. And so PUSH did a lot of work in listening to their community neighbors that informed what the project objectives were. We were doing some parallel work with PUSH to make sure that they had the organizational infrastructure in place to be able to deliver on that School 77 project. And then LISC's affiliate NEF was also involved in the program in terms of bringing low-income housing tax credits to the effort. And so that's a good example of, you know, where we're providing technical assistance, financial assistance in terms of helping to build up the partner organization so that they can manage and complete the project, and then also, when appropriate, the investment product that helps to get the project completed. And so that's one example of a successful piece, and we continue to work closely with PUSH Buffalo as well as others throughout the community once the project is completed to make sure that they organizationally continue to grow and maintain their capacity to provide service.
So how does the project stand today?
It's fully occupied. It's constructed. It's
What is it exactly?
Oh, it's a combination of senior housing as well as organizational offices for PUSH Buffalo, and is the new home to the Ujima Theater. And so it's a slightly different type of project, and, you know, LISC will work with some of the projects that are less conventional for traditional lenders and work, I think, to get through some of the more challenging projects so that the community can really get a full, achieve its full vision.
This shutdown that occurred as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic has disproportionately negatively affected the populations, many of which you deal with. How do you deal with them today? How do you help an organization like that's the senior housing of the Ujima Theater that's involved in School 77 building? How do you help them today? How do you work with them today to get through these issues as they hopefully slowly reopen?
Sure. So we went really intensively with a lot of our partners to make sure that they were having real-time technical information on how to manage their properties, what obligations they needed to make with construction, with staff care, with other management. I will say, to their credit, by and large, they navigated that space very well in transitioning to remote work, in complying with obligations, and, you know, kind of navigating the slowdown. We also were trying to find resources for them operations. And, you know, while we had limited funding in that way, we've been working with organizations. We've provided some small grants to organizations to help shore up their operations. And we're also bringing LISC AmeriCorps members to help give some extra capacity over the next year to some of our partners so that they can continue their work. It's, you know, everyone's remote, and it's both creating spaces to help the organizations, as well as, you know, being a champion and a supporter of those organizations at all levels, with their board members, making sure their boards fully embrace the critical nature of board leadership in this space, where organizations are having to make hard choices and really use a lot of rigor on their operations. With the executive directors, many of whom are juggling everything from their own family's health and exposure to the to COVID, to having to, you know, deal with the stresses of staff management in a remote, you know, having to post a substantial number of staff members, to the direct program officers that might need either some assistance with creating asset management plans, for example, or getting a new website created so that they can stay in contact with their community members over time. So the range of interventions changes depending upon the entity, but we're really trying to listen to our partners and connect them with resources both through LISC and through other agencies.
I imagine that the strategic plan that you put together when you first came into your position there has had to be modified in many ways. I know just about every organization has had to modify their plans, and it's quite substantially. So how do you help organizations, in addition to obviously the things you were talking about earlier, technical resources, connections, conversations, developing strategies to get projects done, and connecting people so that with resources so that the job will actually, the project will actually move forward. How are you now adjusting your plan to help people adapt to this, whatever the new order is going to look like? Because a lot of the people may not even go back to these buildings that you've been working on over these years. They may be working remotely forever. We know that a lot of plans are in many businesses today are being postponed in terms of people coming back just because they're looking for ways to adapt. How do you see the situation, and how are you working with your client organizations?
So I will say, I think we were pleasantly surprised as COVID started to unfold at the resilience of our strategy, because it's really four big program buckets, which are so well established in terms of community and economic development, that we have a lot of confidence, and they're well suited to helping Western New York respond to COVID. So,
what are those four buckets again, just quickly?
It's neighborhood planning around livability, affordable housing, family income and wealth building, and neighborhood business support. And those are the big lanes, if you will, where we try to focus our attention. And we also try to focus our attention on the neighborhoods that are at most need. And in Buffalo, those are places typically on, you know, Buffalo's east side, which have been, you know, as we as a community worked on recovery over the last 20 years, we focused very much on building out from the downtown and the waterfront. And that choice and that strategy meant that we were not investing in other areas of the community, and that has consequences and wound up hurting a lot of people. At the same time, LISC works to be really candid with our organizations and give really good data around, you know, some of the challenges that we're facing as a region. For example, when we work with neighborhoods, we have to acknowledge that the region is looking at almost flat population growth projections for the next 30 years. And so we won't promise a neighborhood that we're going to rebuild what was there historically. And instead, we're inviting a different kind of conversation around recognizing those constraints and finding pathways to really create a vibrant, healthy place that works for the residents who have really, you know, been consistent and loyal to those places and to those businesses. So when we look at COVID and what it's going to take for Western New York to recover, you know, we need to make sure that that we have project proposals for job creation that can be elevated in conversations around recovery and stimulus-style funding that really work for the neighborhood. And there are a lot of projects that are, you know, at various stages of pre-development that we're trying to collect from the neighborhoods now so that they're on the radar of elected officials as they look at opportunities to move cash into neighborhoods and create job opportunities. The work on affordable housing is so critically important. Everyone is monitoring the eviction cliff and what that's going to do to our local economy and displacement. The city has done great work in, you know, deploying its emergency solutions grants. The state has been working on eviction prevention to help people, you know, to help keep people in their homes and keep landlords whole in this space. But it's, you know, it's going to be an increased demand for affordable housing if the unemployment rates stay high beyond the ability of those programs to keep up. And so we're looking at how we can help to activate affordable housing projects so that we can move forward whatever is possible in that space. On family income and wealth building, we have a relationship with the Northland Workforce Training Center where we're bringing LISC's national family income and wealth building program to really improve and build on the great work that Stephen Tucker and all of the partners have been doing there to help further improve outcomes in terms of really helping someone make and from just getting a job to actually having the financial they need to translate that into real financial ability and wealth.
Julie, we have to go to a break. I want you to hold that thought and come back to it as soon as we get back. We'll be right back with more from our upstairs after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And that the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call them today, 633-3700. I'm live remote this morning with Julie Barrett O'Neill, the executive director of Local Initiatives Support Corporation, LISC. We've been talking about many things relative to that organization and its work here in our community. But we've been focusing most recently on how the organization has adapted to the circumstances around us right now, including the COVID-19 pandemic and its seeming continuation, and also the issue of social unrest and how that may affect projects that, and unfortunately sometimes causes the most damage to projects in neighborhoods where you're working, Julie. So, but you were talking just before the break about wealth building and family income and your initiative there, and your work with Northland, for example. Steve Tucker's been on this show, and we've talked in quite a bit of detail about what they're doing there. How has their work been affected by what we're experiencing right now?
So I think they obviously had to do some platform shifting for navigating COVID, and of course many of the individuals in the Delgrider neighborhood and on the east side, as well as some of their participants, you know, of course, facing the challenges that we're all facing as a community. So some of their students may have been working another position, and that's either in furlough or on layoff. And so they're looking at, you know, some opportunities to augment that. People have, you know, additional needs, family needs, because of, you know, childcare situations changed in terms of their availability to kind of participate in the program. And then, of course, you know, switching to a digital format. Stephen has, you know, just and his team are incredible and are bringing great leadership. LISC is providing some extra funding through a national corporate grant in order to be able to help them provide some additional emergency grants to their staff. We're going to be working with them to get their staff the financial coaching training that they need in order to provide that support to their clients in a very robust way, and then to be able to help them navigate the complex financial decisions that are going to be on everyone's plate over the next, you know, year and a half.
There's no question about that.
Nice. They did just get a new program to help increase diversity in manufacturing. Again, a testament to their leadership there and the opportunity to really create an inclusive manufacturing community in Buffalo.
These are obviously very important moves in today's world. How does your organization, or does it, is it a project by project kind of orientation? Is there a broader means by which you're addressing or helping to deal with the matters at hand when it comes to the social unrest and the feelings of injustice suffered by certain elements of our population?
Sure. So LISC is unequivocally and absolutely committed to racial justice. We are very lucky that in all levels of senior leadership at LISC, this has been a very strong and consistent message that didn't start in May, but has been a part of our working ethos for some time. And we are very aware that the real estate and development kind of systems that are in place, not individuals, but the systems themselves are heavily biased towards individuals who, you know, were able to build capital and build wealth, build capacity, have access to, various pools of capital. And so we really work to try to overcome those issues and to address the systematic and institutional barriers to everyone participating in the economy. And here in Buffalo, this is so critically important for us. We are fortunate to have a diverse community, and it is to all of our benefit to have every person's talent and gifts activated on behalf of this community. And so it's a tragedy, quite frankly, as a community that doesn't have, surplus resources, if we don't activate the creativity, the technical skills, the bright minds and talents of every individual in our community. And so we really go into neighborhoods with an asset-based perspective, recognizing that there is talent, there is ingenuity, there's entrepreneurship in every one of our neighborhoods, and that we need to create, we need to remove some of the obstacles that have, historically kept people from participating in the full discussion, having access to the full range of resources to be successful. It's difficult for us in Buffalo. We are a highly segregated community. I believe that our segregation levels are some of the, I think maybe top five or top six in the country, and that gets heavily correlated with everything from income to wealth building to health outcomes. And so if we are going to be successful as a region, we need to be honest about where we have challenges in this space. We need to listen to the community members that have been impacted. And we need to make a commitment to removing barriers to having everyone participate. On the real estate side, that can mean everything from the timing of a deal and the ability, how fast, what are the carrying costs for a real estate transaction? What are the risk management requirements that we put into a project? Who are the individuals that are doing the work? Are they from the neighborhood that is impacted? Are we creating pipelines for contractors and businesses that allow them to compete with organizations that have been able to mass capital over a long period of time? There are so many opportunities for us to create a more inclusive economy in Buffalo and in Western New York, and we think this is an exciting time because it's clearly been put on the table, and it's an opportunity for everyone to help this community heal.
Whatever trends were in place will accelerate during times like these. One of the trends, unfortunately, that I've been reading about is the fact that instead of capital concentration being more dispersed, it's becoming more concentrated in times like these. Small businesses have much more trouble in times like these than large businesses. And the evidence of that is the strength of the stock market in what would seem to be a counter-cyclical situation. And it's hard for me to understand, but the outcomes may not be very good for smaller businesses in our community, in every community across the country, regardless of the divide that may exist in that community. You've talked about advice, capital attraction, timing of a deal, risk management, who is exactly involved in the deal, from the workers themselves to the management, et cetera. These are all complex issues. And I guess I'm hoping, anyway, organizations like yours can redirect some of the capital or some of the attention of those that are able to supply capital in such a way that we can slow that acceleration of what would be perceived, if I were on the wrong side of it, as a negative trend, where those that have concentration of wealth will get greater concentration in times like these. Do you find that to be the case, or am I dreaming?
I think that it's a big opportunity for us in both locally and then nationally, probably globally. I know that at a very basic level and in a really practical step, LISC itself is looking to move some of its own capital into, for example, minority-led financial institutions in order to kind of both reaffirm our commitment to equity, but also to help with this capital concentration issue. We work very closely with major financial institutions, both locally and then nationally at the LISC corporate level, to take on this challenge with CDFIs. And I think, it's one of the advantages of the community development financial institution space that we're able to work with those more established financial institutions to try to provide a balance or a counter space for this larger aggregation of capital. I will also say there's a lot of interesting innovation happening in the Buffalo community that is probably worth lifting up. And whether or not it can get to scale is I think yet to be seen. There's always that potential, but we've got a number of interesting cooperative businesses that have been coming up and moving through the community in the last several years. There are, including the African Heritage Food Co-op, that's working, to restore ownership to communities. We are also seeing a bright young team of real estate folks put together a new tool that's looking to allow smaller investment opportunities in real estate transactions through a tool called Common Capital. That's Rich Rogers and some colleagues. And so they're trying to, the Springville Center for the Arts did a very innovative real estate transaction where they structured it to allow more community members, maybe not just the largest investors, to find smaller bite-sized chunks for making investments in their neighbors and in their community-based businesses. The rise of crowdsourcing, the Kiva lending product, which LISC uses a lot in Rochester for small business support. We're seeing a proliferation of these other tools, which is an interesting balance to kind of this larger trend. And so I think we are interested in seeing how we can help foster those pieces both locally and nationally to allow more investors throughout the community to be involved. But it is a larger issue, Peter, and I know that LISC is looking at it nationally as well.
Julie Baron O'Neill, the Executive Director for Local Initiatives Support Corporation, LISC. How would our listeners participate or help you in any way?
So I think in the immediate moment, we'd invite them to reach out to us on our website. And there are a number of different ways. Because we are looking so much to support our partner organizations, that may be we can help connect you with something that's happening on the ground right now. If you have neighborhoods that you're passionate about or would love to see revitalized, but need to find a way of taking that idea and translating it into reality, we invite you to connect with us on that level. And, of course, there's a lot of work to be done. There are many opportunities to volunteer and support these organizations either through with LISC or through the organizations directly. So we would invite people to reach out and get involved.
Julie Baird O'Neill, Executive Director of LISC, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.
That last song was dedicated to everyone who missed it because they were in the bathroom changing their tampon. And the next 12 hours of songs are for anyone who's trying the Diva Cup for the first time and is currently kicking back with uninterrupted period protection. Sound good to you? Check out the world's number one menstrual cup for yourself at shopdiva.com and get 10% off with code RADIO10. Conditions apply.